Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1203, we bring you three new stories by new Life Rattle writer Sarah Middleton. Sarah Middleton was born in Toronto in 1989 and raised in nearby Burlington, Ontario. She was very shy as a young person and found inspiration in playing the piano and reading novels. At age 15, life changed for Sarah when she learned to engage with the world rather than just observe it. At 17, she started traveling and lived in several different cities before returning home to Burlington. Sarah first attended college to study acting, but switched studies to pursue her love of English and writing. Piss, Red, and Kayla tells about the humiliation of a little girl who wets the bed. After escaping her father's fury at home, she is manipulated by a schoolmate who blackmails her. Then there's the embarrassment of being called from gym class to the principal's office. Let's listen now to Piss, Red, and Kayla, written and read by Sarah Middleton.
Piss, Red, and Kayla by Sarah Middleton. I wake up and feel the wetness beneath me. My heart races as I scramble out of bed. The clock reads 5:56 a.m. I have half an hour until he wakes up. I can't believe I did it again. I feel so ashamed. I strip off my piss-soaked pajamas and change into fresh clothing. I rip the sheets and blanket from the bed and use the dry parts to soak up the wet spots on the mattress. I toss them to the ground as I cross my bedroom floor and carefully open the window to air out the room. It creaks loud enough to wake the house. I listen for a sound from down the hall, but hear only my heart beating. I gather the soiled linens in my arms and cautiously open the door. I pause at the top step and feel reassured when I hear snoring from down the hall, then tiptoe down the stairs. I toss the sheets into a pile in the far corner of the laundry room. I'll deal with them after school, and I grab fresh ones. I go back to my bedroom, flip the mattress over, and put the clean sheets and blanket on the bed. I mess it up a little to look like it's just been slept in. I grab Febreze from the kitchen and spray it lightly around the room. I go to the bathroom and clean myself up. I go back to my room and hear the house begin to wake for the day. I hear Mom head to the bathroom. I peer around the door of my room and see Dad coming towards me on his way to the kitchen. Terror runs through me. I stare at the ground. His feet stop just inches away. I look up and see his face contort in disgust. You pissed yourself again, didn't you? My eyes meet the floor. I say nothing. This is why you have no friends. You don't deserve friends. Dad keeps walking. I turn around and close the door slowly. My cat, Red, sneaks inside before it shuts. I sit on the bed and cry. Red snuggles up against me. I wait until Dad leaves for work and then get ready for school. I put my hair up in a ponytail, throw on some jeans and a t-shirt, and scarf down a piece of toast. I don't tell Mom what happened. It's best not to. I head out the door and Red follows me. I shoo him away. I don't want the other kids to think I'm weird. He dodges from bush to bush, keeping about 20 feet behind me, and follows me almost all the way to school. Thankfully, I lose sight of him as I cross the school parking lot. The bell rings. I line up with the other fifth graders in my class. Our teacher, Mrs. Eaton, leads us to her classroom. I feel anxious. What if they can smell the pee on me? The other kids group with their friends and make a lot of noise until Mrs. Eaton tells them to be quiet. I sit at my assigned desk near the back of the class. The space next to me is empty. I feel disappointment and relief that Kayla is absent. When attendance is taken, I see a shock of red hair as Kayla walks through the door, late again. She takes her seat beside mine. I smile at her hesitantly when she sits down. She doesn't meet my eyes. A cold dread runs through me. I find it hard to pay attention to Mrs. Eaton. When class begins, Kayla ripped a piece of paper from her notebook, writes something, and passes it to me. The note reads, "I'm mad at you." I go over the last few days in my head. I'm not sure what I did, but I have to make it better. My hand shakes as I write back and tell her I'm sorry. She writes back, "If you don't make it up to me, I'm going to tell everyone your secret." A few weeks ago, I invited Kayla to come play at my house. She said she smelled something funny in my room. Unfortunately, I'm not a good liar. I told her the truth. Kayla tells me at recess I have to cancel my plans with Gemma tonight and tell Gemma I don't want to see her anymore. She says this will make up for whatever I did to her. Gemma is my only real friend. I beg Kayla to make it anything else. If you don't do it, Sarah, I'm going to tell everyone you wet your bed like a little baby. If you don't come and play with me after school, I'm going to hurt myself. I do that when you make me angry. She's threatened me with this before. I've seen Kayla deliberately hit her head on the metal frame of her bed. The bell rings. It's time for gym class. I promise Kayla that I'll find Gemma next recess and tell her she's not my friend anymore. I dread gym. I feel exposed. I hate undressing in the change rooms. I never know what to wear, and I hate exposing my body to the other girls. I lie to a couple of the girls and say I need to use the washroom and change there. We get to the gym and sit in a circle. My hips are disjointed and I can't sit cross-legged like the other kids. I feel stupid. Teachers always nag me to sit properly. I wish I could. I'm comfortable only with my legs to the side. They form a W. Before I sit down, the PA system beeps for an announcement. We all listen. Mr. Bull, can you please send Sarah down to the office? Everyone stares at me. More than anything, I want to run. My face flushes. I keep my head down and grab my bag. I make the short trip to the office. I hope I don't have to return to gym class. I pray I'm not in trouble for something Kayla did. She's blamed me in the past for stuff. I peer through the glass door, afraid to knock. One of the secretaries, Mrs. Doyle, meets my eyes and motions for me to enter. When I walk in, I see a small fourth grader sitting in a chair holding a cat. It's Red. He looks ready to bite and tear at the kid holding him. My embarrassment and anxiety almost get the better of me. I can feel the tears well in my eyes. Red jumps out of the kid's arms and struts over to me. I pick him up. Mrs. Doyle looks at me with some amusement. This is the third time we have caught your cat walking down the halls of the school. He seems to be looking for you. I stare at the floor and mumble, I'm sorry. I then ask if I can take him home. She agrees and tells me to come right back. She knows I live just around the corner. I feel a sense of relief. I walk out the doors and clutch Red to my chest. He purrs. I kiss him on his head and let the tears flow. I don't go back to school.
That was Sarah Middleton reading her story, Piss, Red, and Kayla. In the next two stories, Sarah follows a relationship from the sunset glow of a romantic canoe trip in Luke to loneliness and almost unbearable ennui at Greenside's farm, no ordinary farm. Let's listen now to Luke, immediately followed by Greenside's farm, both written and read by Sarah Middleton. Please note, these stories contain situations that some people may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
Luke by Sarah Middleton. Hey Sarah, let's go for a canoe ride. Luke lifts himself up from the sand, leans over, and gently kisses me. I squint to see him more clearly in the bright sun. The warm sand beneath me makes me sleepy. I can't help but smile at the happiness I see in his bright blue eyes. Okay, let's go. Luke smiles down at me. I want to play you my new song. Luke has been telling me about his new song all week. A few nights ago he played the first verse for me. He is a talented actor and musician and doesn't get nervous often, but Luke's nerves got the better of him and he couldn't finish. It's our last full day at Wadabeg Lake. We saved our money for a couple months to rent a cottage for a week with Andrew and Will, our friends and roommates. Luke grabs my hand and pulls me to my feet. He skips in excitement as we head back up the beach to the cottage. He grabs his guitar while I change into warmer clothes. As I change, I hear Luke whisper to Andrew in the next room. When I walk out to meet them, they stop talking. Andrew meets my eyes and gives a mischievous smile. Have fun on your canoe ride, he laughs. I walk in front of Luke and cross my arms. What's going on? Luke gives me an anxious smile. You'll see. It's nothing to worry about, though. I feel my stomach shift nervously. Luke reads the apprehension in my face and leans down and kisses me on my head. Let's go, hon. Luke and I head out the door together. Suddenly, he wraps his arms around me and lifts me into a tight hug. His reddish hair brushes against my cheek. He gives me a loud kiss on the lips and twirls me around. His enthusiasm is infectious. I laugh. We walk hand in hand the short distance to the dock. Luke gently places his guitar in the canoe, and I reach for an oar. Nuh-uh, he shakes his head. You relax. I'll do all the work. He winks at me. I smile at Luke and step into the canoe. He pushes us out and hops in. I watch the muscles on his skinny frame hard at work as he methodically paddles. I meet his eyes. He's been watching me the whole time. I blush and he smiles. I love you, babe. I feel a flutter in my stomach and smile back. I love you too, I say. I can't wait to hear your song. This time he's the one who blushes. Luke rows us into the open water, and I feel at peace. We picked a great cottage, with not a soul for miles other than us and wild animals. At night we sit by the campfire and listen to the sounds of the forest. During the day I catch up on reading, while Luke, Will, and Andrew spend hours catching fish for dinner. I don't bother helping. I have no fishing skills compared to these country boys. Luke continues to row. We pass a few small islands, but he refuses to stop because none of them are perfect. Eventually, we pass a little island no more than half a mile across, with a sandy beach that extends about 10 feet. A thick line of forest sits behind the sand. Luke gives me a thumbs up and rows us into shore. We disembark. Luke grabs a blanket he stowed in the bottom of the canoe and lays it on the beach next to his guitar. We sit together on the blanket beneath a bright afternoon sky and watch the waves roll in. Eventually, Luke gives me a fleeting kiss and picks up his guitar. He sits opposite me and takes a few deep breaths. Ready? Of course, I laugh. The song is called In the Moment. I wrote it for you. Luke starts to play after 3 or 4 false starts. His voice falters. I've never seen him this nervous. I kiss him in encouragement, and then he finds his rhythm. Rushing water, silent air, weeping willows, wind through your golden hair, curling toes in the soft sand, backs against the ground and eyes towards the sky, hand in hand and thinking about life. We are young and oh so free. We can have it all, Sarah, you and me. Luke's shaky voice forms the words. It's almost too mushy for me, but it sounds so beautiful coming from him. His voice falters again near the end of the song. He chokes out the last line. I know you can make it. Love for eternity. Baby, please take a chance with me. My breath stops. I wait in anticipation. Luke doesn't meet my eyes as he carefully sets his guitar aside and reaches into his pocket. My heart pounds. Do I want this? Luke gets up on one knee and pulls out a small box. He opens the box and I meet his eyes. There is nowhere else I want to look. Sarah, I love you more than anything, he stammers. I can't imagine my life without you. Will you marry me? For the first time in my life, I feel tears of happiness. Warmth rushes through me, and I knock Luke on his back and kiss him passionately. Well? Yes, I'll marry you, Luke. Luke gives a shout of joy and sits up. He picks up the forgotten box beside us and takes out the ring. He takes my left hand in his and places the ring on my third finger. I set my eyes on the ring. It's perfect, delicate and beautiful, with 2 intertwining bands of white gold set with 6 little diamonds and 1 larger center diamond. We lie on the beach for hours, reveling in the beauty of one another as we watch the sun move across the sky. The sun sets and we hop back in the canoe and row back to our cottage. Andrew and Will wait on the beach by the campfire, a celebratory drink in hand. I look at Luke curiously. They know, he laughs. They helped me pick the ring. They're going to be my best men at our wedding. He stops walking and gives me a thoughtful look. Our wedding. I love how that sounds. Luke gives me a kiss and Will captures the moment with his camera. We all sit around the campfire and drink to happiness and to health. Greensides Farm by Sarah Middleton. The bright light from the window filters through my consciousness, and I slowly wake up. I feel happy. Remnants of a light-hearted dream quickly escape my waking mind. Then a feeling of emptiness starts to swirl inside me. I look beside me at the vacant space in the bed. Luke has already left for work. I vaguely remember a kiss on the lips before he left me for the day. I stare at the ceiling of our bedroom. The exposed wooden beams and slanted roof make the room feel even smaller. I lie in bed for a few minutes and decide what to do today. My options are limited. As I sit up, the old mattress and box spring squeaks with a vengeance. I'm sure Luke's Nana hears me from downstairs. I stand up and instinctively walk around the stovepipe hole in the middle of the floor. A piece of plywood covers the hole, but does little to muffle noise. I walk the few steps to the other side of the room. A makeshift shelf runs along the wall and serves as a closet and dresser for Luke and me. I change out of my pajama bottoms into jeans. Since I'm not going anywhere, it feels pointless, but I do it anyway. I walk down the hallway to the living room. The floors squeak incessantly. I've learned the best places to step to avoid the worst of the noise. I pass the stairs and consider going down to say good morning to Luke's Nana. It would be nice to have someone to talk to, but I just don't feel up to it. She doesn't really like that I live in her house. The upstairs apartment had been unoccupied for years, and she only grudgingly allowed Luke and me to live here, and only for a while. In the living room, I see my cat, Gizmo, asleep on the couch in a patch of sunlight. I run my hand down her warm fur. I cross the room and grab the bong I keep hidden behind a vase. My stash of pot hides behind a couple of books on my bookshelf. I open a window and sit down on an antique striped sofa that matches the couch across from me. I pack a full bowl and take the first hit. I feel an instant release. I stare at the window as I smoke the bowl. The vibrant green hill and trees to my right sparkle in the dewy morning sun. To my left, through a line of trees, I can just make out the marshy stream. The current runs smoothly thanks to all the rain this summer. I consider going for a walk to the river when I see the first couple of people making their rounds on Greenside's farm. I quickly finish the bowl and shut the window. I walk into the kitchen and Gizmo jumps off the couch and follows me. She growls for food. I fill her dish and look out the window at the farm. A few cars are already parked in the large dirt driveway. I glance at the calendar and realize it's the first Saturday of the month, which means it's going to be a busy day. Greenside's farm has acquired some mild fame. Apparently God came to Luke's grandfather in a dream and told him to build a place of worship for people to come and pray. And so he did. The farm is about 5 miles from the little town of Marmora, Ontario. People come here from all over Ontario and even outside of Canada to pray. Every day people pray at the 14 stations of the cross. Often they leave mementos and tokens for loved ones. Sometimes money is left for farm maintenance. At first I made an effort to help out, but I lost interest. I don't like being around the crowds. The most popular station is at the top of the hill, where a 20-foot cross has been erected in the forest. There are always candles, letters, flowers, and garbage littered around the cross. At that station a few years ago, a group of 30 people claimed they saw a vision of the Virgin Mary. Thousands have claimed to have visions and experienced supernatural things at the farm. A small spring lies about halfway up the hill. It keeps refilling itself. Those who drink from it claim they have been cured of illness and disease. There are plenty of skeptics, though. An active cell phone tower is located not far from the cross. Doubters argue that the weak magnetic fields generated from the tower have caused these illusions. I don't know what to believe. In the short time I've lived here, I've experienced nothing. I see couples and families chat amiably as I get out of their cars and walk along a path to the farmhouse. A few of them enter a little chapel beside the house. My eyes follow the winding path that starts beside the chapel. It travels around the house, up the hill, through the forest, and ends again by the chapel. Interspersed around the path are the 14 stations of the cross. I go back to the living room and sit on the couch. I stare at the wall and decide what to do. We don't have cable, internet, or a car. I'm alone until Luke returns at night. Lately he's been gone almost 14 hours a day. It takes an hour for him to drive to work for an 8-hour shift. After work, he meets with his acting group for a few hours at the Belleville Community Theater. Then he has an hour's drive home. He returns, eats, we hang out for a half hour, and then he goes to bed. There's little work in the area. I haven't found a job. I spend my days wasting time. I pack myself another bowl and put a disturbed CD in the CD player. I smoke the bowl and listen to the whole CD, and then the tears start to flow again. I can't stand this life anymore. I miss the city, I miss my family and friends, and I miss Noah. It's been close to a year since I've spoken to him, since Luke's ring was placed on my finger. I miss the years Noah and I spent together. I wonder what he's doing now, and if he misses me. This house seems smaller every day. I feel further from Luke every day, and further from the life I want. I decide to pray. I pray for an hour and a half for guidance. Then my high starts to wear off, and I fall asleep right on the couch. When I wake up, it's dark. My cell phone flashes right on the coffee table. I flip it open and see that I have two messages. The first is from Luke. Hey babe, I'm going to be late tonight. What's up? The second message is from a number I don't recognize. Sarah, it's Noah. Are you in the area? I miss you. My heart races as I think about how to reply. For the first time in a while, I feel a spark of hope. Maybe there is some magic on this farm.
That was Sarah Middleton reading her stories, Luke and Greenside's Farm. That concludes Life Rattle number 1203. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Sarah reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Actman. Tune into Life Rattle next Sunday night at 9 to hear two more stories by Sarah Middleton.